8. Turl had felt smug right up to the moment he received the summons from the planetary director. He was nervous now, waiting for the appointment to occur. The weeks had fled on, the summer fading into the chill of autumn. The man-animal was doing well. Its every waking moment seemed to be spent crowded up against the Chinko language and technical instruction machine. It hadn't begun to talk yet, but of course it was just an animal and stupid. It hadn't even grasped the principle of progressive speed cross-association until it had been shown. And it didn't even have enough sense to stand squarely in front of the instantaneous conceptual knowledge transmitter. Didn't it realize you had to get the full wave impulse to get it through your skull bones? Stupid. It would take months at this rate to get an education. But what could you expect of an animal that lived on raw rat? Still, sometimes when he went in the cage, Turl had looked into those strange blue eyes and had seen danger. No matter. Turl had decided that if the animal proved dangerous, he could simply use it to get things started, and then at the first sign it was getting out of hand, it could be vaporized fast enough. One button push on a hand blaster. Zip, bang, no man animal. Very easily handled. Yes, things had been going very well until this summons. Such things made one nervous. There was no telling what the planetary director might have found out, no telling what tales some employee might have carried to him. A security chief was ordinarily not much consulted. In fact, by a devious chain of command, a security chief was not directly under the planetary director on all points. This made Turl feel better. In fact, there had been cases where a security chief had removed a planetary director, cases involving corruption. But still, the planetary director remained the administrative head and was the one who filed reports, reports that could transfer one or continue one on post. The summons had come late the night before, and Turl had not slept very well. He had tumbled around in his bed, imagining conversations. At one time, he had actually gotten up and combed through his office files, wondering what he had on the planetary director just in case. That he couldn't recall or find anything depressed him. Turl only felt operational when he had big leverage in terms of potential blackmail. It was almost with relief that he saw the appointment time arrive, and he rumbled into the office of the top cyclo. Numph, planetary director of Earth, was old. Rumor had it that he was a discard from the central company directorate. Not for corruption, but just for bumbling incompetence. And he had been sent as far away as they could send him. An unimportant post, a rim star in a remote galaxy, a perfect place to send someone and forget him. Numph was sitting at his upholstered desk, looking out through the pressure dome at the distant transshipment center. He was gnawing absently on a corner of a file folder. Turl approached watchfully. Numph's executive uniform was neat. His fur, turning blue, was impeccably combed and in place. He didn't look particularly upset, though his amber eyes were introverted. Numph didn't look up.
"Sit down,"
he said absently.
"I come in response to your summons, your planet ship."
The old cyclo turned to his desk. He looked wearily at Turl.
"That's obvious."
He didn't much care for Turl, but he didn't dislike him either. It was the same with all these executives. Definitely not first team. Not like the old days. Other planets, other posts, better staffs.
"We're not showing a profit," said Numph.
He threw the folder down on his desk. Two Kerbango saucepans rattled, but he did not offer any.
"I should imagine this planet is getting mined out," said Turl. "That's not it. There's plenty of deep-down ore to keep us going for centuries. Besides, that's the concern of the engineers, not security."
Turl didn't care to feel rebuked.
"I've heard that there's an economic depression in a lot of the company's markets, that prices are down."
"That could be, but that's the concern of the economics department at the home office, not security."
This second rebuke made Turl a bit restless. His chair groaned alarmingly under his bulk. Numph pulled the folder to him and fiddled with it. Then he looked wearily at Turl.
"It's costs," said Numph.
"Costs," said Turl, getting his own back a bit, "has to do with accounting, not security."
Numph looked at him for several seconds. He couldn't make up his mind whether Turl was being insolent. He decided to ignore it. He threw the folder back down.
"Mutiny is," said Numph.
Turl stiffened.
"Where's the mutiny?"
Not the slightest rumor of it had reached him. What was going on here? Did Numph have his own intelligence system that bypassed Turl?
"It hasn't occurred yet," said Numph. "But when I announce the pay cuts and drop all bonuses, there's liable to be one."
Turl shuddered and leaned forward. This affected him in more ways than one. Numph tossed the folder at him.
"Personnel costs. We have 3,719 employees on this planet, scattered over 5 active mine sites and 3 exploratory sites. That includes landing field personnel, freighter crews, and the transshipment force. At an average pay of 30,000 galactic credits a year, that's 111,570,000 credits. Food, quarters, and breathe gas is averaged at 15,000 credits each. Comes to 55,785,000 credits. The total is 167,355,000 credits. Add to that the bonuses and transport, and we have nearly exceeded the value of our output. That doesn't count wear and tear, and it doesn't count expansion."
Turl had been dimly aware of this, and in fact, had used it as an argument, a false one, in furthering his own personal plan. He did not think the time was ripe to spring his project, but he had not anticipated that the powerful and rich intergalactic company would go so far as to cut pay and wipe out bonuses. While this affected him directly, he was far more interested in his own plan of personal wealth and power. Was it time to open up a new phase in his own scheme? The animal was actually doing pretty well. It probably could be trained for the elementary digging venture. It could be used to recruit other animals. He was pretty well convinced it could do the necessary mining, dangerous though it was. Stripping that vein out of the blizzard-torn sheer cliff would be quite a trick and might be fatal to some of the animals involved. But who cared about that? Besides, the moment the stuff was gotten out, the animals would have to be vaporized, so the secret could never leak.
"We could increase our output," said Turl, fencing in toward his target.
"No, no, no," said Numph. "That's pretty impossible."
He sighed.
"We're limited on personnel."
That was cream to Turl's earbones.
"You're right," said Turl, heading Numph further into the trap. "Unless we solve it, it will lead straight into mutiny."
Numph nodded glumly.
"In a mutiny," said Turl, "the first ones the workers vaporize are the executives."
Again, Numph nodded, but this time there was a flicker of fear in the depths of his amber eyes.
"I'm working on it," said Turl.
It was premature, and he hadn't intended to spring it, but the time was now.
If we could give them hope that the cuts weren't permanent, and if we imported no new personnel, the threat of mutiny would be reduced.
"True, true," said Numph. "We are already not bringing in any additional or new personnel. But at the same time, our installations are working very hard, and there's already some grumbling."
"Agreed," said Turl.
He plunged.
"But what would you say if I told you that right this minute I was working on a project to halve our workforce within 2 years?
"I'd say it would be a miracle."
That was what Turl liked to hear. Plaudits from one and all in the home office would be his yet. Numph was looking almost eager.
"No cyclo," said Turl, "likes this planet. We can't go outside without wearing masks,
which increases costs in breathe gas, said Numpf.
And what we need is a workforce of air breathers that can do elementary machine operation.
Numpf sank back, doubt hitting him.